Looking for a guiding hand in your Amazon business? Wizards of Ecom Academy is here for you. Our personalized support system includes unlimited email access to myself and my entire team to help you overcome challenges and strategize effectively. Sign up for an exclusive rate at wizardsofecom.com/academy. Your personal e-commerce coach awaits.
Hey, what's going on, fellow wizards? This is a quick little recording before you get into today's episode. I recorded an amazing episode with Keith O'Brien from Page One, which you're about to listen to, having to do with, as the title suggests, conversion rate optimization and why it is so important. It seems like an obvious one, but Keith really touches on some not so obvious reasons on why conversion rate optimization is extremely important and exactly what it is in this episode. Now, the reason for this quick recording to you is to apologize in advance. I recorded this episode and apparently my non-techie self didn't select my pod mic, which you're listening to me on now, and instead had the computer audio. So I was sitting close to my mic, not realizing that my computer was capturing my audio. So you're going to notice a really, really drastic difference between the audio you're listening to right now and my audio. Fortunately, you can hear Keith perfectly. I just wanted to give everybody a heads up that this is something you should expect. My audio sounds very low, like very low compared to our guest Keith's, and that this is obviously something that was a mistake. And in the future, I'm going to do a much, much better job at making sure that doesn't, you know, slip through. Also, a huge thank you to Shane, who's the brilliant, brilliant person behind the scenes that makes these podcast episodes sound great. She caught it and she brought it to my attention. So sit back, walk on your treadmill, whatever you're doing right now, that you're about to listen to a really good episode with Keith O'Brien on what is conversion rate optimization and why it is important. Apologies again for my audio.
Welcome to the Wizards of Ecom, your no-fluff playbook for online success. Each episode is fully packed with actionable tactics you can implement in your business right now. Take your life to a higher level and excel in your online success. It's time to work on you and your business. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Wizards of Ecom. We talk about all things private label. My name is Carlos Alvarez. I'll be the host for the show. On today's show, we have an Amazon OG, kind of stealing something here, Keith O'Brien. Keith, what's up?
Hey, what's happening, Carlos? If I'm an OG, you are an OG of the OG.
You were, or you still are, very well connected in this. It used to be like the guy during a launch. It was like, I spoke to Keith. I'm sure we'll get into your company in a second, but it's an honor to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, man. We're been in and around each other's orbit for a long time, and we're both living the Vida Loca down in sunny South Florida, less loca now in these days than it has been before, but it's great to be here.
That's a good way to say it. It seems like Florida too, like South Florida specifically, just kind of has taken this as a, like, corona? What corona? Like, just, right. Yeah.
It's a cerveza,
I do think, we've never talked about this, but I do think that there has been two different occasions that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe it was at the Canton Fair, that I was on an opposite floor and I actually saw you on an opposite floor walking by with a group of people in Canton, two different years. So we have crossed paths in another country.
That's funny. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, it's amazing. It's one of those cool things. You get on the other side of the world, right? And then you connect with people that are 20 minutes from you at home, which is pretty cool. What I wouldn't give to get on a plane and leave the country right now.
Absolutely. We do a group trip to China free, but they say China is the safest spot in the world or something right now for Corona, but I don't see myself flying back there for a while. I don't know if it's like the psychology behind it.
Yeah.
Bali, yes. We'll go to Bali.
Go say hi to patient zero.
Yeah, right. I don't see myself doing that. You have a ton of experience. I don't think a lot of people know your backstory. Like, we were jokingly speaking about it before. It makes sense. I know you, but for people that have started selling, say, in the last 3 years, maybe they don't know you as well as I do. I want to, like, this will be a way for you to share your background as well as, I feel like it will simultaneously set your credentials here for what we're going to talk about. So can you, we don't need to start from birth. We can start from, like, when did your relationship with e-commerce begin?
Yeah. So, I think that, I've been selling goods and services online for a while, right? So I would say that the kind of the journey started, I've been in, some sort of direct sales. So, business to consumer for quite a while, since like my early 20s. And I turned 50 this year. Holy crap. So, back in the day, I learned direct response copywriting, and we were doing, believe it or not, we did a ton of direct mail marketing, back in the day. I remember the first time ever signed into AOL.com, right? And that little lightning bolt went across the screen. It was so exciting, right? So fast forward to about 6.5 years ago, a previous business partner of mine had, we had been in service businesses for a while. We'd known each other for a long time. He just got the bug to say, hey, this whole physical products thing intrigues me. This is early days, really before there was even courses out. And so he researched, manufactured a product, started selling it, and literally was just, he put it on Amazon, but didn't know what he was doing. So it wasn't selling. It was selling like a unit every 3 days. And every other direct marketing attempt he had just didn't go well. And then he ended up getting together with a couple buddies and went to the very first amazing.com back when it was called, what was it called? ASM, Amazing Selling Machine. And he came back and he implemented some stuff they learned, and he started selling 303 units a day of $150 per unit product. He's like, shit, this is a business, right? So around that time, he came up with the idea to create a review service, and I ended up partnering him with him on that. That was December 2014. That company was called I Love to Review. He then really wanted to get back into training, and so he stepped out. I took the company over in May of that next year, 2015. Some of your listeners may know him. Guy's name is Adam Hudson. He owns Reliable, founder of Reliable Education, one of the larger training companies in the world for Amazon. So I took the company over. We scaled it up. That business was fun. We were very hands-on, white glove service, consultative with Amazon sellers back when you were allowed to run campaigns specifically to drive reviews. And so that's where it all kind of started. And so what happened was, because we weren't just a website, Carlos, like all the other competitors that launched after us, we were actually like a little mini agency. And so people would, sellers would call us, they'd talk. Our account managers all got trained on, best practices on listings and all these things. And so we used to just give all this, feedback for free, because we could put 500 reviews on any product in 2 or 3 weeks. Right. So, and most of the listings back then were they were dog shit, right? They were bad images, bad, no one was even teaching it. I mean, there wasn't any keyword tools back then. Right. So, we just gave all this feedback for free. And so then when Amazon changed the rules in October 2016, we closed that company down basically overnight and pivoted into initial early days of an agency. And we've grown up from, doing copy and content to now we do copy, content, photography, design, ad management, and full brand management. So it's we've grown a little bit in the last 4.5 years, but that's where it all started.
That's wild, and that date's gonna live in infamy. It's gotta be like one of the darkest Amazon days, I feel, for the majority of Amazon sellers. I think a lot of people didn't have the wherewithal to pivot. Another thing is, I have to say that seeing page one, seeing knowing I Love to Review, extremely ethical. It's something I've admired. Like, I Love to Review was completely different. It may have still existed to this day if not for everybody else that came on with just really bad intentions, no care towards just crapping in their backyard on Amazon is what they were doing. Mm-hmm. Had it not been for that, I mean, you guys actually, it was legit. Yeah. It was awesome.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. You know, we tried to do it right. Like my joke was like, you know, they could send the Amazon internal affairs down and rip apart our platform. And they would have been like, damn, I mean, you guys are doing it just like us on Vine. Right. And like, yeah, that's the intention. Right. That was the goal. So yeah, we did a lot of things that would cost us money and were made our life more difficult as a company. Right. But it protected sellers and it protected us, right? You know, in the end, I'm not sure it mattered, but you know, I'm happy and proud of the way we went about it.
Absolutely. Over the last year, Keith, you've really dove deep into conversion rate optimization. In today's episode, I really want to like pick that apart from
sure
what it is and see how deep we can go with it. Beforehand, though, with what your experiences were in previous jobs, including I Love to Review and now H1. Do you feel like you took any skills or learnings from these other companies that have allowed you to really get a firm grasp on conversion rate optimization?
Yeah, I think that like I'm one of those guys, like I'm not like the data scientist, but I really like to evaluate the data. I don't like compiling it or being responsible for getting it, but I like to use it to make decisions, right? And so, you know, I think realistically it kind of came, you know, when I first started like really learning about sales process and things like that. You know, like I said, I started studying direct response copywriters and really learning the psychology of words and psychology of color, psychology of pictures. And really that stuff all fascinated me. I think most of my interest in business came out of, you know, the psychological aspects of things first, right? So, you know, I started studying personal development stuff before I started studying business practices. I just, you know, always really, you know, was drawn to that conversation. And, you know, I think it's fascinating on why we do what we do, right? And why people do what they do in a marketplace and why consumers behave they do. I think that stuff is just, it's just fascinating, right? And so, yeah, applying that into Amazon and e-commerce specifically, or Amazon specifically, you know, Amazon does a lot of that work for us, right? And, you know, I think that it's really easy to kind of get complacent, you know, to take Amazon for granted because they can be just a royal pain in the ass sometimes. With that said, most people that only are on Amazon, like the depth of what you've got to learn and do off of Amazon to have a successful storefront on your own site is just so much more, right? So Amazon does a lot of that. They've spent, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars testing every little thing about their platform. And we see it all the time. Like everything's still being tested, right? You know, you see something one day and it's like, wait, that wasn't there yesterday, you know, and then it's not there the next week. They've just run a beta test on it. So, yeah, so it's just interesting. I love that, the psychology of it. And I think that'll be something that I'm forever interested in when it comes to business.
It's funny you said that. So in my meetup group, I think you predominantly, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think currently you predominantly work with more established brands and sellers.
Exactly. Yeah, well, it depends, right? So we have the two sides of page one, right? We have individual services that are all kind of project-based, and so that can start with one individual SKU, right? We can optimize a listing for anybody. We can do, you know, image stack and product photos, A-plus design, storefront design for anybody, right? And then on the managed services side, we manage advertising for, you know, for almost anybody, right? But our brand management team, like that, for that to be a fit, the business has probably got to be turning over, I mean, at least a half a million a year, more likely closer to a million a year, if not greater. And that's fun because it combines all of our teams and we get in there and really partner with the brand owner or the business owner. And we run everything, right? So, you know, they handle inventory and sourcing and we really do the rest.
So that you may know exactly what I'm saying to what you were saying a second ago about how you look at Amazon one day and it shows something and the next day is something else. In my media group, I'd say weekly for a beginner hour, I get some people that come in there and they're like, I just need help setting up the Amazon account to open it. And my initial thing is, dude, like, why did you look at YouTube? Like, this is all over the place. But it's like, okay, like, let's do this. Whatever will get you to start. So I can do this drunk, blindfolded, like I've done this so many times. So I open up the thing and I'm looking at it. It does not look like these new dashboards on how you start and where everything is at. It does not look anything like when I was opening an account. And here I am scratching my head. I'm like, where's Tax Wizard? You know what I mean? Like I'm bumbling around. So yeah, Amazon changes and is testing all the time.
Well, you're better than us. We don't do that. Like that to me is like a black hole of crazy, right? Of all the potential things. And that, you know, it's gotten harder, right? It's definitely gotten harder in the last 12 months, just even to set up an account. So, you know, fortunately we have a few people that for different categories inside of Amazon that, you know, we can send a new, if someone does need to set up an account and they can kind of walk through. And what's nice is then we get an account manager internally on the account for a year. But you know, I wish I had it for every category. We, you know, just have a couple.
So conversion rate optimization, CRO, what is it and why is it important? Like, let's leave no stone unturned as we do this.
Yeah. So I think, you know, it's the, you know, part art, part science of the path of a visitor landing on your listing and or off Amazon on your website through to purchase, right? And it's all the different things and all the different influences that and levers that we can pull that will influence whether or not that person turns from a visitor to a customer, right? And so the optimization of it is really trying to move that conversion rate percentage, you know, tick by tick higher and higher, right? And the impact is fantastic, right? Because on Amazon, it's one of the two biggest levers for ranking, right? So you've got your sales, and you've got your conversion rate. You know, Amazon wants to maximize that revenue per search. And so they want to send traffic, and visitors to the most relevant, most likely listings to convert them into an actual sale. So that's it. That's it in a nutshell. And there's a ton of different, even on Amazon where they take most of the pieces, you know, they do them for us. There's still plenty of levers to pull.
I couldn't have said that better. I feel like I've said that in my group. And here's the next question I get. So I'm going to be the newbie here. And I'm going to ask you this. What is a good conversion rate?
Well, you know, depends on the product, right? Depends on the product, depends on the price point. Depends on a whole ton of things, right? So, you know, like I sell premium products personally. That was an alliteration right there. Premium products. I can't even say it twice, right? So, you know, some of my SKUs sell for $100, right? And a good conversion rate on those listings is 6-8%. So, and then. We got real world. We got kids without shirts walking in the background.
He's got to say hi next time he passes by. For any listeners, we're doing the Zoom call. Brandon, so if he comes by again, he has to say hi. That'll be the rule.
So, and then, you know, I have SKUs in that same family that are, you know, between $40 and $50 that have a conversion rate of 15 to 20%, right? So, you know, but we have clients that have conversion rates of 40 and 50%. Right. I mean, it's just nuts. I'll share an interesting quick story. We have not a client, friend that was looking through their store. It was actually a business we were considering buying. And maybe 60 or so SKUs. their average conversion rate across their entire store was almost 70%. 70%, right? Wow. So the girl's like, that's insane. It's unheard of, right? But something was happening. It took us a while to figure it out. Because some of their SKUs are over 100%. We're like, they have some SKUs that have more units sold than sessions. And we're like, what the heck? So I know I'm getting into a lot of jargon for the newer guys, but so session is a visitor, unique visitor, right? So obviously you can't sell more units than people that visit your page. Like that doesn't make any sense. So what was happening? They've been selling for 6 years, right? So what was skewing the numbers so crazy for them? They weren't brand registered. So how many times do you rebuy the same thing and you go into your phone or you go online and you go straight to your previous orders page and you just buy it again? So it doesn't count as a session, but it just counts as a sale, right? So they had such a big percentage of their customers doing that, coming back and just buying from them over and over and over again, that their conversion rates are astronomically skewed.
That's great. I wonder if they did anything like intentionally to do that. It's like, I want this so fast, and the easiest spot to find it is I know it's in my cart everywhere. So I'll just go.
Well, you know, it'll be interesting to see because they just got brand registered and now can use Subscribe and Save. And so we'll see how quickly that starts building out for them, which is really interesting. Anyway, but you know, I think if you're under $50, you know, if you can push over 20%, you're generally in good shape. A lot of, you know, a lot of listings are going to hover in the 30-35% range. But you know, it just depends. You know, you could be cranking along with a 15% conversion rate and be a happy guy.
You know, let me see if I can word this in a way that makes sense and let's play with this. So
sure.
Hiring people for my agency, we made a lot of mistakes when it came to PPC stuff in the past, especially with like remote interviews, because we would ask them really stupid questions that like I could be simultaneously Googling something. And it was like, that was a waste of time. So instead we started coming up with things like, I think it was a simple one. So you're looking at the reports, you have a ton of impressions and no clicks. Like what could possibly have caused that? So someone can't really Google that. If you're this intermediate advanced, you know, operator, this is something you should be able to do at the end of the day without thinking. So we tried to build out, I think we did pretty good. We built out this like playbook of sure. scenarios. So with this, like going in that playbook thing, you see somebody with a $50 product and it has a conversion rate that you would call low. What are the first few things that you're looking at?
So, okay. So the first thing I'm going to look at is I'm going to take a glance over a variety of things first. I'm going to take a 10,000 foot view of the listing, you know, the images, title. I'm going to dig back into these, but I'm just going to take a cursory look, right? You know, are all their images there? Like the basic stuff, like are they sitting with one or two images? Or do they have all seven, right? Is their title like, it looks like they pulled it from their spec sheet that, you know, they're from their manufacturer where it's got a SKU in it and all that crap, right? You know, do they have any social proof with reviews? But I think the thing I would start to go underneath first is I'd look to see where they're falling in terms of actual organic rank on maybe their top 30 or so relevant search terms, because your conversion rate will increase as your rank gets better, even if you don't change your listing, right? So you'll have a huge jump from going, if you're on page 3 for a term and then you get to page 2, you're going to increase your conversion rate and you haven't changed anything.
Can you walk through why before we continue building for anyone listening? So
yeah,
your BSR is 150,000.
Right.
Change nothing. You have a low CRO, and now you jump to 50,000 BSR. Your conversion rate is going to improve. Yeah. Can you explain why?
I think it's a combination of a couple of things. I think that you know, we have a tendency to, well, first of all, a lot of people don't go beyond page 1 of search results anyway, right? So they're going to get the lion's share of the traffic, right? And then once you go past page one, like you kind of forget where you are, right, on Amazon, and you could be on 2, 3, 4, unless you look at the bottom, you don't really remember. So I think just subconsciously, psychologically, there's a greater level of trust on page one than there is beyond page one for from a consumer standpoint. So, but again, you got to kind of look at it and test it. Like, you know, you might get a higher conversion rate sitting at the very top of page two than the bottom of page one psychologically. Like people flip the page, but then boom, you're right there. And they, oh my God, it's a top search result again. They forgot that they flipped the page. So, and then the other thing I think was it's definitely changed now, right? But before they changed how mobile search was, like, you know, mobile search used to have like that, the unlimited scroll, right? You'd search for something and then you could just, you know, and that's for the listening audience, right? That sound effect. And you could be at like search results number 100, like with a couple flips of your thumb. And that's changed now. Like they have pages on mobile search now. So I think that that's another factor on it.
Okay, so that's a perfect explanation. So you improve your VSR and it improves your conversion rate. And then I had interrupted you on your examination here, like this live teardown.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I would do that. Then I would just deconstruct the listing, right? I'd start with the title. I'd then go, because look, at the end of the day, like your from search to actually someone looking at your actual listing, we call it I'll call it like the search results conversion rate, right? Like you're going to show up in search. I look at that as that top of the funnel, you know, very top of the funnel. So someone searches for, you know, insulated coffee cup, right? You got to win the click before you could ever win the conversion, right? So, you know, everyone's basically showing the same thing, and all that the customer sees, as we know, is image number one, title, price, review count, star rating, and that's pretty much it, right? I mean, there's nothing else in the search results that people are going to see. So, you know, you got to win the click first. So the first set of things to focus on is, okay, what am I doing with the influences of winning the click? First main image, clear, well lit, all that good stuff. You know, we're really white hat when it comes to Amazon. But we'll push the limits on images because it doesn't get you kicked off; it just gets you suppressed, right? So we'll play around with that image number one, and so anyway, I mean, look, if you're selling a baby product, I mean, there's not a result on page one that doesn't have a baby in it. Now, the baby is not going in the package, but Amazon seems to, you know, at this point, not care too much. So first image, pricing, right? You know, this is, again, the psychology. Like, people, like, they don't even know what's happening. But if you have a search result and that's your main keyword, and then they see it kind of at the front end of your title, like, it just makes sense to them. And our mind loves to make sense of things. And so, you know, your main couple of keywords really should be at the front end of your title. Depending on people's phones, you know, it's going to truncate the title at a certain number of characters, around 80. Recently, I noticed on my phone, I'm seeing the entire title in search results, which is really interesting. So that kind of above the fold, that winning the click section, you just need to go point by point. Main image, title, get your, you know, reviews, star rating in the reviews, and price, right?
Let me ask you something sort of random, and then I want to get back to this. Main image.
Yep.
Render or photo?
Well, you know, I own an actual real photography team inside of my company. So I don't own the team. I own the company that has a team.
Sure. But maybe that you're fleshing it out on the back end. You have a main image. Well, that's perfect. Where do you go?
We don't do any renders. So, okay. You know, we like real photography. I get it. Sometimes, you know, you're going to get it to look perfect. You know, rendering is 3D rendering is an art, and most people are not very good at it. And so I think it looks crappy. You know, it is against terms of service. It's just, you know, but a lot of people do it. I think it's probably most popular inside of like supplements, right? A lot of times they'll render it, you know, because you can make it look perfect, right? But I will tell you, like rendering and then putting it into a, like beyond the first image, like the first image to be have that be rendered, no big deal, because it's going to look freaking perfect. But obviously, you don't have to do anything to it. It doesn't take retouching. Just get that done. But once you move into the listing and you're putting that now into stock imagery, like that is an art that is very hard to find good talent, and it's going to mostly look like crap.
I 100% agree. I am not a fan of. I think I default towards photography.
Yeah,
I feel like being able to achieve what I'd want to pull off in photography, like what I would want to do, it's not cheap. I'm not going into a $50 photo shoot to do that, but I look at it as this is going to pay for itself within how many weeks or like how many months?
Right.
And I have it forever. The render in the main image, though, I can tell you that there has been some instances, depending on the product, that I'm like, main image, like sometimes perfect is bad, like too perfect, right? So, but there are times that I feel like, yeah, in this situation, I like the render as the main image. Secondary images, I feel like I have a BS radar for that. Like if somebody's going to put their dog supplement on the sofa next to the German Shepherd and they're rendering it in, it just screams cheap to me. My spidey senses go off and I bail.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, we look at listings in a very different way than normal shoppers, right? You know, but you know, I don't want to put anything on a listing that you know, we talked about, you know, the mind likes to make sense of things. Well, a confused mind doesn't like to decide anything, right? So a confused mind almost always says no. And so I don't like to do anything in a listing that is going to confuse or disorient or have a consumer question something. Like, even if they don't know they're doing it psychologically, it's just happening in their subconsciously in their head. Something doesn't look quite right. Now, we all see listings that have shitty, you know, shitty images and they sell well, right? And that's what ruins it for newer sellers. They come out, well, that thing's doing well. You know, I can just do that. No, you know, you can't, you know, you don't want to. I would 100% agree with you. I think there's times that both are valuable, right?
Taking it back to CRO. Thank you for that, by the way.
Yeah, sure.
It had to be hard. Have a photography company and maybe say, you know what, there might be some instances to have a render in there, but I love it. Sincere to the end. Let's talk about, you diagnosed the CRO. Well, you got diagnosed that you saw that it was low. It's a $50 or less product, and I'm the newbie client here. And I'm like, what's going on? You did the 50,000 foot view and looked at the title, the images, everything like that. I'm assuming you're also looking at some of the competition and what's going on there, because maybe their price has something to do with it.
Right.
Total assumption here. Do you change all of it at once?
You know, look, I think you can, but you really want to know what actually moved the needle. So you probably shouldn't, right? But you can always go back and test, right? So the reality is, I think best practices, like some things, yes, you're going to continue to test, but we just know, right? Like if the content sucks, like you can run a reverse ASIN and figure out what they're showing, you know, what the listing's showing up for. You certainly don't want to re-optimize the content. You don't want to take out any of the stuff that's actually driving some sales, right? So, if it's got some decent search volume estimated and you've got a decent rank for it, you want to make sure that that's going to stay, you know, in a prominent place, that keyword. But if you're missing really relevant search terms, you know, you got to put them in, right? I mean, that's just not a play that you need to test. Like, you've got to add them. If the images are really bad, like that one example I gave you, this company where I was looking to buy, the conversion rates were so high that I didn't want to touch anything. Like, I'm like, I don't know if we're going to want to optimize this stuff, right? Like, there may be something about how bad they look that people actually like, right? Because the like seriously, images, it looks like they took them in their basement with their iPhone, right? When it, on a overcast day, right? So, like what we have, would have done on that store would be I would have dropped down to probably the 15th best seller, and I would have run our playbook on that one and track the results, right? So, you know, I think that. The old school of testing is to change one thing at a time, track the results for a little bit. But I think it's one of those things where you can use, you know, some level best practices if it's just really bad. You know, if it's really bad, we're going to rip the Band-Aid off and just make it all good. You know, if it's decent, you know, we'll change the content first, track sessions, track, you know, the discoverability, and we'll change the images next. We'll add A plus after that, update the storefront next. You know,
that's the next thing I wanted to ask. A plus and video in the listing as a thumbnail. What's the impact there on conversion?
Yeah, it could be, for listings without a lot of traffic, it could be nil, right? It could be negligible. But with listings with a lot of traffic, we've seen them pop. You know, we've seen listings that add A plus and the conversion rate jumps 5 points, you know, 10% easy, 15% easy. So, especially, you know, when they started showing it on mobile, right. You know, and depending on mobile, depending on the category, sometimes, you know, the A plus content shows ahead of the content, right. So, they're forever changing it around, right? And then video, certainly, video on page is going to really increase the amount of time that a person spends on your listing, you know, if they're going to watch the actual play of the video. And, you know, the longer someone stays in your listing, the more likely they're to convert. Like they're already in line at the checkout counter.
Do you offer video services?
Unadvertised, so only for our actual clients. So if you're already doing photography with us, if you're already, you know, we're running your advertising, if we're managing a brand, we do video in studio. So simple stuff that works on Amazon. We don't do like the full production out at a location, that kind of thing.
No avatar like quality.
Yeah, you know, like it's just a lot of work and it's really subjective. I already have one department that is massively subjective in photography and design, and I'm not interested in that adding another one. So just for my sanity. But on Amazon, you know, I think that the most important thing to get video done for now is your advertising. Not almost more important than the detail page.
Perfect. I think that was awesome. I mean, I think you just took it from like low CRO, you diagnosed it, you looked at it, you mentioned when, you know, in some cases, if it's just a total dumpster fire, yeah, change everything. I mean, it's a dumpster fire and it's not getting sales and it's hemorrhaging ad spend. You know, we're not going to just change the title and neglect the horrible images for 3 more weeks of continued bleeding.
Right.
Okay. So that's awesome. I want to ask you just one thing and then I want to be respectful of your time.
Sure.
Well, first of all, do you feel like we didn't cover something that you feel like would wrap this up in a bow, if you will, regarding CRO?
I think like, you know, let's just call what we just talked about like level one, level two. Let's say that there's 3 levels, right? So we just covered the core basics. Next level, which is starting to really understanding, we haven't done level two really, just understanding like the psychology of the images and really wanting your images to tell a cohesive story. So I think like the next level above that is really just thinking through the psychology of the buyer, right? And how do we lead them through that journey, both with our words and our images? So it makes sense. And so it leads them through a natural process, right? You think through on the images. I like, you know, internally, we like to think through, okay, what are the kind of the steps of this buying decision? And see if we can craft a visual story that naturally funnels them through from you know, just finding it to through that decision. And there's all kinds of fun things you can do there. So really great use of graphics on top of images, you know, really focusing on benefits of what's in it for them as opposed to features of what something does. You know, you got to have both, but, you know, you want to really sink your teeth into the benefits.
Let me see if I'm giving a good example here in the psychology to make sure that I'm getting what you're saying. So I spoke to, actually interviewed Nick Katz, which is an episode. I don't know if you're familiar with Nick Katz. He's an Englishman who's been living in Japan forever. And he does really well in Rakuten in Japan. But he mentioned when we were getting into the product detail page of Japanese listing. So most people in Japan, everyone in Japan lives in a very small place. Really, really small home. So if you're showing images and say you have a salt and pepper shaker and you're showing the image or this photography on this beautiful, huge kitchen counter, it's not really relatable. The psychology is not there because they don't have one. Now, if you showed it how it fits, like super good in this never used space and can hang on the wall completely out of space and not utilize any of your very precious limited kitchen counter space, that communicates psychologically the right message. Is that really what you're saying?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, in America, you know, we're addicted to increasing status, right? You know, that's why we buy most things, right? We're going to solve a problem, but right behind solving those problems is, you know, how is that going to look to other people? How am I going to feel when I make this purchase? You know, like in our studio here in Fort Lauderdale, you know, I've got, you know, that's why I invested. We've got this, we have a full kitchen, right, in the studio because we shoot so many, you know, kitchen products. You know, and I have, you know, I have nicer countertops in our studio in the office than I do in my house, right? I mean, I just spent, you know, I just installed this beautiful quartz and this gorgeous Italian cabinetry because we want to take that same salt and pepper shaker and elevate the status, right? Most people buying it don't have kitchens that nice. We want to show something that is above their level so it brings them psychologically into that ownership status.
Genius. Do you mind sharing another example? Just because that was so good.
Sure.
I know you're totally on the spot. This is not rehearsed.
Well, that's status elevation. So I would also say, you know, like if there's a known issue with a competitor product and you've solved that issue, I would absolutely make sure I showed that in the images, right? So if you've done your product research and you read the reviews of all these competitors and there's a bunch of negative reviews about something, you know, the insulated coffee cup, right? Oh, this thing doesn't really keep it hot, right? It only stays hot for 30 seconds, you know, 30 minutes or whatever, right? 15 minutes, you know, so you want to make sure that that is easy to find and easily shown in your images if you've solved that problem. If your cup keeps coffee hot for 2 hours, not that you'd want to nurse a cup of coffee that long, but I am a person that as soon as it even gets a little lukewarm, I cannot drink it, right? I can't drink it. I think cold coffee is gross, right?
I'm a nice coffee guy, so.
Yeah, see, that's different. If the coffee is made to be iced, I can drink it. If it was once hot and I have warm coffee in my head and then it starts to get warm, I can't drink it at all. So, yeah. So highlight the problem, the known issues that you've solved creatively, right?
Sweet. Keith, I'm going to be respectful of your time and wrap this up. I'm going to save this next one out here on the podcast so I can kind of hold it over your head. I'm hoping we can get together and I can impose on your time for like a workshop for my local group since we are local and you've just tapped maybe the psychology of what goes into like the photos, maybe even at your studio. I think you hinted that might be an option one time, but I really love that. You made the thing settle down a little bit with COVID. You're a genius. I love it. Thank you so much for everything you shared on the show. Before we totally wrap up, can you share how people can get a hold of you, ask questions about the show, work with you?
Yeah. Probably the easiest is just go to the site. It's page.one. So not.com, although we will show up in search results, but page.one. You know, there's, you know, call in, you know, email in from the site, you know, we have account managers that will get back to people. You know, don't think you're too small. Don't think you're too big. I mean, our sweet spot for brand management is probably like the 1 to 10 million range, but we have clients that are bigger. We have clients that are smaller. But you know, we do creative work for just about everybody, you know, some, you know, Fortune 50 companies and some people that started just like we did, you know, and they're on product number one and day one. Right. So page.one, it would be the best place to get us. And if you want to connect with me, LinkedIn's probably the best place. So just go find me on LinkedIn, Keith B. O'Brien.
You know what I'm doing? I'm about to do here. I'm about to ask you a question, even though I was wrapping this up, because you said something, I don't know, it kind of made me think, I what I'm doing here is kind of like, we call it Miami Cuban time, which is like this running joke that, you know, you start something at 1 and you don't get there until 1:30.
Yeah.
God, you just said something and now I'm drawing a blank. What did you just say right before this?
LinkedIn, website.
Before.
Brand average, 1 to 10 million, Fortune 50 companies, small guys, day one.
Day one, that was it. I love it. Right. I've only had one coffee this morning, so day one. We've been selling, you and I have been in the Amazon space for a while.
Yep.
Harder to sell now than when we started, or vice versa? What's your take on that?
Being fully transparent, it's definitely harder, right? Definitely harder. I mean, we made so many clients, so much money back in the I Love to Review days, because it was just like, you know, I mean, think about it. You launch a product now, you're going to grind out getting reviews at a review rate of 1 or 2 or 3%, right? We used to put 300 reviews on a product in 2 weeks, you know, and it didn't matter what it was, right? That's awesome. So it's definitely harder. I think we talked about this a little bit on the beginning before the show started. I think, you know, most of the successful clients that we work with, it's, you know, they've got a bigger catalog than before, right? So they've got more products, less just huge high flyers, more of a consistency. If you can get, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 out of a SKU with a decent profit margin, you know, you just got to build a bigger catalog, you know? And the nice thing about that, you know, if you've got I looked at a business to buy the other day and it was doing about $350,000 a year, no product doing over $10,000 a month, right? 6-year-old company, right? I'm like, oh, this is friggin' brilliant, right? Average SKU monthly revenue of 6 or 7 thousand, right? It was awesome, right? So to me, I love that, because you know what? You're under the radar. You know, you're not competing against the guys. You're not top in the category on almost anything, right? So I love that. That's a great business. That's a little boring, a little sleepy, and give me that all day long.
Yeah, the margins seem so much more exciting. It was like this 2-year period where I was like number one or number two, or we're not doing it right. And we had an issue with Amazon and we stayed sort of stuck between position 6 and 9 in search. Our profit margin like almost tripled.
Yeah.
They probably had just amazing margins, but awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd almost love to be number one for like the 10th, the 30th best, you know, highest volume search terms than I would, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Before letting you go from the show so we can get on with our days, what is your favorite book and why?
Oh, man. That, you know, that is an unfair question. That is so hard to narrow to one, right? I'm gonna cheat and give you multiple. Yeah,
okay. Norman Farrar did the same thing. I think he gave like 6 books.
Yeah, so one of my favorite novels, I'll start with that, is it's a big one. It's called Shantaram. It's a journey. I mean, I think it's a 1,000-page book or something like that. It is an enjoyable read from open to close. Right?
Sounds like epic fantasy, like that.
It's brilliant. It's hard to explain, but it's brilliant. And it's a great audiobook too, because the voices are fantastic. And then probably over the last couple of years, Tribe by Sebastian Unger, I think is his name. That's fantastic. On the personal side, The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. And on business, I've got so many.
We'll do probably, the whole, like, you're being dropped off on an island for 30 days and you can only grab one business book.
Oh, man, that's so unfair. It's not the most impactful, but it's probably the most entertaining, is a book called Contagious. But I would just grab, like, my entire, entire arsenal of Seth Godin books, and I just grab all of Seth's stuff and run.
Purple Cow.
Yeah, Purple Cow. Like, his new book called The Practice is fantastic. I loved All Marketers Are Liars. I think all of it. Tribes, his book is great. I like all of his stuff. I just devour it. I think he's probably one of the most prolific writers, thinkers in marketing of our time.
Absolutely. I love it. You're amazing. I think you just cost me, looks like, about $100 in books right here, on Audible, since I'm keeping my word that I'm buying all of them. You actually named a bunch. This is exciting. Like, you named a bunch that, I've not read. I Untethered Soul, my wife is swearing by, and she's reading it now.
Great.
So I'm not going to let her hear this part. The Contagious, I may have read. The rest of them, I have not read.
You can reread. You could reread the first chapter of The Untethered Soul, and, like, it's a book. I read the first chapter, and I went back and read the first chapter like three times before going for it. I was like, oh man, this is brilliant. All right, what about you, man? What's give me three of your favorites.
Absolute three favorite books that I've ever read. I'm a huge fan of this book, maybe not the most well written, but it's something that was the most impactful for me, and it was The Slight Edge, which is like almost identical to The Compound Effect, I guess.
Jeff's an old friend of mine.
Jeff, I'm dying to meet this guy.
Like, yeah, he lives locally. Well, he used to live locally.
Oh my God, that book has such a crazy impact on my life. What does he say in there? Like, showing bone. I think it was his dad. I was like, you gotta be showing bone, or you gotta go back in there and do it. But that's the book that's had the biggest impact on me. Two other books that I feel like had a big impact for me for business is both by Ayn Rand, and it was Fountainhead
and
Atlas Shrugged.
Sure. Yeah, I was gonna say Atlas Shrugged, but I thought that would just be, a little typical.
Dating yourself, no?
No, just typical, right? Yeah, but hey, look, if you've got through Atlas Shrugged, you can get through Shantaram.
Yeah, so no, I'm going to get it. Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time. I hope to have you back on again soon, and I'm going to keep bothering you about that workshop.
No, let's do it, man. Let's do it. I'll commit here to it here first.
It was fun sharing this episode with you. If you found value in what you've heard, please show your love with a subscribe, rate, and review of the show. Until next time.